Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 4th, 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. Also with me today, and she brings with her a special guest that we will get to later in the show, Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, hello. Happy Tuesday.
It is indeed.
I haven't been on for a few days.
I know.
You've been okay without me.
We've managed to struggle through.
The struggle was real for both of us.
It really was. Speaking of struggle, Dave, I want to go to you and talk about Neil Young's current struggle, and that is with the quality of the sound of music today, if I'm correct, well, characterizing that correctly.
Yeah, that's one way to say it. The other way, well, I think you're right, actually. I think that's what he's complaining about. Where he started that was to say he was on the Vergecast with Neil A. Patel recently and said that the MacBook Pro has Fisher-Price quality audio. He says it's a piece of crap. It's like Captain Kangaroo, your new engineer. And so he says, you know, the DAC is no good.
Now, what's DAC for people who don't know?
Right. So DAC is the chipset in the MacBook Pro, the digital to audio conversion, digital to analog conversion chipset. Audio that we hear is analog because our ears are analog. And so speakers must move air. Speakers, dynamic drivers, balanced armatures, depending on what you have. But something needs to move the air so that our ears can feel the air move and translate that into sound.
Okay.
And so when you have digital audio, you need something to convert it. And so Neil Young is complaining about all of this. And this is not the first time we've heard from Neil Young about this. The problem is that Neil Young is a music industry professional. He's a recording professional. He's a touring professional. He's a songwriting professional. He's a singing professional. He's a playing professional. I don't personally like his voice, but that's okay. Like, I still respect the heck out of the work that he's done and the fact that rock and roll wouldn't be what rock and roll is without him and many others. But he's certainly, you know, right? Like, and the scary part is when he gets out here and starts talking about things like this that are his opinions fueled by lots of different things that we'll talk about here, when he starts representing them as though they should be perceived as facts. And because
yes,
he's a professional, it's very easy for many of us to just take his words at face value. You know, we don't all have the expertise or experience, we should say, that he does. And that's sort of the point of expertise is,
right,
you know, we have to trust it. And so that's where this stuff gets my hackles up. And he did this 5 years ago, oddly, when he came out, oddly, I say only in irony to what he's saying today, when he came out with a digital music player that was, he called it the Pono player.
Mm-hmm.
And its claim to fame was that it played audio back at the highest bit rate possible, quote unquote, as the artist intended. And to just use the bit rate or the sample rate, it was the sample rate and bit rate that this thing would do, you know, up to 24-bit, 192 kilohertz audio, which is pretty much, you know, again, you can go higher, like the MacBook Pro will do 32-bit, I think. The whole premise of that was streaming is bad,
mm-hmm,
because streaming in general, and we might take Tidal out of this, but streaming in general is streaming compressed audio, digitally compressed audio. So mm-hmm, you have this uncompressed signal and then it is compressed. And compression, other than Apple lossless or some other lossless compression, but generally all these streaming services, including Apple Music and Spotify and those, and even Tidal, unless you pay for the extra Tidal,
mm-hmm,
they are all compressing the music, which means that data is being removed in the interest of saving space, which then saves bandwidth and all of that. So
right,
so he doesn't like when music is compressed. And then now, for some reason, he's going even further and saying even uncompressed music that you would be recording into and mixing on a MacBook Pro. Eventually, it might be released as something compressed, but that's not what he's complaining about specifically with the MacBook Pro. He's just saying, well, the MacBook Pro is incapable of doing this. But really, I think what he's saying is what you said originally, which is that, you know, music today is not recorded in the same way that it was recorded in the past, specifically Neil Young's past.
Right.
And therefore isn't as good. And he does wax poetic about analog being the only way to truly capture audio because, you know, it's actually moving things. And that's the only way to really, if you stop moving things and you just convert it into bits, it's still not the same and all that. And for Neil Young, when he is listening to music, that is correct. The problem is that that's not universally correct. It's not a universal truth. It is something that we've encountered many times, mm-hmm. and we all deal with this, that's called confirmation bias. If, let's say, Kelly and I both like the same song, right? And we play that song at my house on my speakers that I know and love, and I am certain are the best speakers that exist, certainly between me and Kelly, let's say. Mm-hmm. And then we take that same song and we go to Kelly's house and we listen to that on your speakers that you know and love to be the best. Mm-hmm. And someone does like an fMRI on our brains while we listen in each environment. They will show, those fMRIs will show, assuming an fMRI is the right thing. I'm not an expert in that, so I might have picked the wrong test. But let's assume that this is a test that can show when pleasure centers in the brain are activated,
yes.
whatever that test might be. Okay. They will show that at my house, on my speakers, when I listen, and I know that I'm listening on my speakers, this is the important part, my pleasure centers will rank higher than they would at your house when
right.
I know that I'm listening on your speakers and vice versa. And this is confirmation bias. Our brains will actually make us truly happier if we are experiencing something in a way that we have previously convinced ourselves will make us happier.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's awesome. Like, I love the fact that we can hack our brains this way. And so if you like the sound of vinyl better, and it makes
I do.
Which is fine.
Then cool. Yeah.
Then cool. But objectively, when this stuff has been double blind tested, meaning the person or computer delivering the test does not give any indication, or in the case of a human, does not know which, you know, A, B they're doing. And then, of course, the person receiving the test does not know which A, B they're doing. In double-blind tests, when you compare properly reproduced, and I say properly reproduced meaning that the equipment is not faulty,
mm-hmm.
properly reproduced analog audio and properly reproduced digital audio, the same source track and all of that stuff, just depending on which way it's been, you know, converted and reproduced, people guess at about a 50% rate, or people select at about a 50% rate on blind A/B tests, which means that's just as good as guessing.
Yeah.
No one can tell the difference.
Right.
And no
can
one...
I jump in here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because I spent a lot of my undergraduate degree producing music on Mac computers and producing a lot of digital computers. But obviously, we were also taught how to use analog and record in analog as well. And I think your point about this actually being a lot about looking back to how things were really stands. Because the truth is, with computers now, and it's only got better with very accessible software like Logic and those kind of things, the ability to create music that sounds good to most people most of the time on most systems
mm-hmm.
has been greatly improved and greatly democratized.
It's true.
And I feel very uncomfortable with someone like a Neil Young, who, like you say, whatever you think of his music, you can only respect the career.
Mm-hmm.
Coming aboard and saying, this is Fisher-Price crap. You can't produce proper music unless you're in a big, old-fashioned, old-school studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, that is not the case anymore. And actually, you know, when I bought the Mac Mini and started playing music through it, I was kind of impressed how it sounded. Now, it's not as good as when I plug my computer into the my proper JBL speakers that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously.
But
when I'm faffing around on my computer and just want some background music,
mm-hmm.
Apple actually have periodically improved the audio quality that comes out. And I personally think have always been pretty good at providing tools to produce high quality audio as well. So I'm kind of very much team Dave on this, actually. look, yeah, I love listening to vinyl records. I still buy vinyls. I love listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, I love, you know, mucking around on Logic and writing music on that. And, you know, listening to music that I've downloaded on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Actually, I was saying to you guys off air, my biggest gripe with Apple and audio is that the headphones that come with most Apple devices, notably the iPhone, still sound pretty horrible and tinny.
Yeah, they do.
Like that bothers me a lot more than the quality of audio connected to the computers, whether it's you know, what you're listening to, whether it's what you're creating.
Yeah.
If you want to have a discussion that modern music is too compressed, we can have that discussion. But correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but that's kind of not what Neil Young is getting at, is it?
Not today. 5 years
not
ago,
today, right?
Yeah. No, 5 years ago, he was ranting about how, you know, we were accepting this lowest common denominator of streaming music that was compressed, and we were losing any semblance of quality because he thought everything should be uncompressed. And he's not wrong, but there's a nuance even to that argument. But you're right,
definitely.
Not where he's coming in today. For that 5 year ago argument, I dug really deep in this. And there are most modern music, most professionals can't tell the difference between Apple's 256K AAC and the uncompressed source from which it came. And that's largely just because of the way most music is produced these days. It's produced to be, you know, kind of louder, more full, more dense in terms of a production standpoint. So you don't get the opportunity to hear where those artifacts of compression would come in. That said, there certainly are places where you can hear that. And I've trained myself. I can hear pretty reliably, certainly better than 50%, the difference between the Apple compressed track of Dave Brubeck's Kathy's Waltz from his Time Out album, which was recorded so amazingly well like 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear the difference between the you know, the Apple compressed and the uncompressed version that is available. But it doesn't make it any less pleasurable for me, but again, subjective, to listen to. But there's certain moments in that song that was recorded in an old church, and you hear a lot of the room's sort of natural ambient reverb happening, and the decay of that, the fall off of that, gets cut a little bit shorter on the compressed version than does on the non-compressed. So, but again, I had to train myself. I took an educated guess that I bet that album, and it turns out I'm not alone. Like anytime I have this conversation, I've had this conversation like 5 years ago when I did this, I talked to a lot of different music producers like Giles Martin and Bruce Botnick and I mean, lots of other people. And more often than not, Brubeck's Time Out album came up as like a good reference standard. It's like, oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, such a moron. But you know, you can like, but if you just have a working knowledge of a lot of different music, it makes sense that something like that, where there's a lot of air in the recording, would be the sort of thing where you'd begin to notice the difference. Classical stuff also, but you know, I'm less of a classical person, more of a jazz and rock and fusion guy. So that's where I just naturally went to. It's like, what recordings do I know? And Brubeck's Time Out was something I've been listening to since I was a kid. So, you know, there you go.
First of all, we need to off air discuss how you're friends with Giles Martin, and we'll deal with that later. I think a lot of it, so, you know, I always kind of whinge and moan that, you know, these companies offering like 8K TVs are sort of taking the mick a bit because most people can't really see the difference, right?
Right.
Like 4K or like you can, I think, see the difference between pure HD and 4K.
Yes.
But after 4K, I kind of think you're pushing your luck a bit. Mm-hmm. With audio, I think it's the same. For most people, good quality is good enough. Now, for someone like Dave, who has a very, very trained ear, he's going to be able to pick up on the stuff. And that's okay, because someone like Dave can, or indeed Neil Young, can create a setup that suits them and makes their, you know, makes music sound how they want. Mm-hmm. But for most of us, you know, what you get through iTunes and a not bad pair of speakers or headphones, like I say, will be good enough. And I think right. for someone like Neil Young to try and kind of diminish that both in terms of how music is produced and equally how we listen to music, I really find quite uncomfortable.
Well, and I think part of this is that Neil Young is ignoring a huge reality. And that reality is the way that people consume music now is different than it used to be. When you used to have to find a studio and go to a studio to record a record to go put on the radio, because the only way anybody was going to hear it was if you put it on the radio and then they would go buy that album. And
as Dave pointed out to us, you had to compress stuff for FM anyway. So
for that too.
Anyway.
Yeah. So
well,
I think
two different
what
types
he's
of compression.
Sure.
There's digital compression and then there's dynamic compression. And they share a word in common. That's basically it. So
they're
just,
different things, but
But the point is you had to do some accommodation for the platform through which your music was going to be paid.
But people listen to music on computers, like Charlotte was saying earlier. She listens to music through her Mini. I listen to music on my computer all the time, connected to external speakers, sometimes connected to headphones. I listen to music streaming out of the speaker on my phone. Sometimes it's streaming, sometimes it's local stuff that I've synced myself to my phone. Sometimes I listen on my iPad. Sometimes I AirPlay stuff from my iPad or from my phone to my massive Bowers & Wilkins speakers that are over here in the basement that I love. And like I listen to music also in the car. I listen to music all different ways on all different manner of devices. And I understand that when I'm listening to Nine Inch Nails out of the speaker of my iPhone or Soundgarden out of the speaker of my iPhone, that it's going to sound dramatically different than when I put the CD into the Sony CD player and play it over high-end optical cable through the Denon amp out to the Bowers & Wilkins speakers. I understand that those are different experiences. And I think part of what Neil Young is mad about is that I'm not putting that CD in and listening 100% of the time. Sometimes I want to hear Super Unknown on my phone. Sometimes Louder Than Love I only want to hear it, you know, when it strikes me in the moment. Now I have that ability. Thanks, Apple Music. So that's the part I think
Chris
that
Cornell's
is...
Chris Cornell's voice still sounds great, so it's fine.
Chris Cornell's voice is amazing no matter what. Yes. If you if you played that record over Tin Cans and String, I would still listen to it and be happy. But I think, like, the other part... the part where he's complaining about that and, like, completely ignoring the streaming piece of this, I feel like it makes him sound very dismissive. And then the fact that he name checks Captain Kangaroo, which is a dated reference even to me, and I'm no spring chicken. I am of a particular vintage that I do remember Captain Kangaroo, but it's vague because he went off the air in the early 80s. So, you know, to not call it Sesame Street, which is at least something that's still on TV, I found it like a little easier to dismiss him because he's like so outraged about it that he stops sounding like somebody I can take seriously.
I want to add one thing before we wrap up. And this is always my concern coming into discussions like this. So easy, because it's so subjective. It's so easy to get caught up in all these tangents. Talking about streaming here is relevant, but yes, there is the ability to perceive, for some people, and not everyone, not everyone cares to, for some people to perceive the difference between a compressed, streamed, you know, piece of music versus its uncompressed counterpart. Mm-hmm. There is no human yet that has been able to tell the difference between CD quality and greater than CD quality audio.
Right.
And that may happen someday. We are continuing to evolve, but in blind A/B testing, No one has been able to do it yet consistently. Yeah. Sometimes people get lucky, sure, but consistently we just haven't found anybody. And I quite frankly await the day that we do. But based on all the research I've done, we just haven't found anyone. So it's right. just really important that that fact doesn't get lost here, because as soon as we start talking about music, and you know, streaming has to come into it, because that's how most of us listen these days, even picky people. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there can be a perceptible difference. It's not always there, but it can be there between, you know, compressed for streaming and uncompressed. Mm-hmm. Anything, you know, CD quality, 16-bit, 44 kilohertz and above, humans just can't. So I just think we haven't yet. I don't want to say can't. Haven't yeah. yet. So I just wanted to kind of leave us with that, just so that we don't lose track of where we are.
And it depends on everything, like, you know, what that gap is and what you're willing to listen to. Like, I'm more willing to listen to certain kinds of music only on the big speakers because I get more detail out of them. Like, if I'm going to listen to the Pet Shop Boys, for example, I'm going to listen to them on the big speakers, or Depeche Mode, because I'm going to get more detail out of that than I am on my phone. And those are generally dense musically. So there's a lot of stuff that you just miss out on because your phone doesn't have the capability to play it. And that's fine.
Right. Yeah. And now we're not even talking about the technological, the conversion capabilities or the source of the music. We're talking about the actual final, you know, the end result. What speakers are being used to yeah. attempt to reproduce this. And for most folks, you might not be able to hear the difference between uncompressed and compressed because your speakers don't offer that level of detail. And,
right.
that's also okay. Like that's yeah. part of Neil Young's opinion is okay.
Yeah.
For Neil Young. I have right. no problem with that. Of course, he's happier listening to the songs that the recorded or any music recorded the way that allowed him to create the career that he has had. I mean, well, I would be too.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But it just felt like it feels like he's continuing to make a conscious decision to burn bridges, right? It's very easy to dismiss somebody that's making a Captain Kangaroo reference as like, you know, you're not really in touch with what's going on now. Like there's a certain piece of reality that I think he's ignoring, and it would be easier. So anyway, that said, we are going to move on to our sponsor today. Our sponsor today is Zapier. And Zapier is, in short, Zapier is a service that allows you to hook things to other things and handle the automation of that for you. And that can be handy to do different sorts of automated things. I know we have a few that we use here in at the TMO Towers. We have a couple Zapier automations that make it easier for us to get by every day. And it allows you to connect software to all kinds of different things. So you can engage with somebody in a particular way. Maybe you have leads or customers. You can send those automatically to a CRM. You can even add those automatically to a spreadsheet, or you can send an email to somebody when a certain thing happens, just to make sure that stuff is being taken care of by all the people and by all the software that it needs to be taken care of. So Zapier supports more than 1,500 different applications. You can join more than 4.5 million people who save an average of 40 hours a month by using Zapier. And right now, through the end of the month, just for my listeners, you get to try Zapier free by going to the link zapier.com/TDO, zapier.com/TDO for your free trial. And again, zapier.com/TDO. And I would definitely like Dave to give us an example of this, because I know, Dave, you are a big Zapier fan.
I am a huge Zapier fan. Yeah. And I find it's one of those things. It's so universally applicable that it's hard to listen to like an ad without a specific example and understand the value. Yeah. So what one thing we use it for is at Mac Geek Gab, we have our premium listener program where people can contribute directly to the show. And we'd like to thank them in the show. And previously what I would do is I would look through the emails that come from our e-commerce system, and I would copy the or read and retype even the name of the person and, you know, where they were from into a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And then I could read that spreadsheet when we're doing the show to thank these people. And that's a tedious thing. Now, I was happy to do it because people pay us money and it's great. But I suddenly realized Zapier could do this. So I linked Zapier up with both Google Sheets, which was the spreadsheet I was using, and WooCommerce, which just happens to be the WordPress-based e-commerce engine that we use. Mm-hmm. And now anytime an order comes in, it triggers Zapier to grab just the information I want. So the person's name and the city and state and country they're from, and put it into that very same Google spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And now it's just automatic. I don't have to think about anything and I can just read through the list. And so that's the kind of stuff that Zapier. Zapier.com/TDO.
I think part of the reason that this ends up being something that saves people so much time is because not only does it save you the actual task, the time of the actual task that you're doing, but it also saves you the time that you spend sighing deeply and rolling your eyes and feeling like there has to be a way to make this something my computer can do for me. And so that's where all that savings is coming from, because it's saving you both the rolling of the eyes and the time it actually took to do it in the first place. So thank you, Zapier, for sponsoring the show today. And again, Zapier.com/TDO. And Charlotte, I'd like to move to you. And I feel like we've done this show before. Charlotte went to the Apple store and came home with a new friend. It's both shiny and pretty. Yes. And we'd like to hear about it.
So, yes, I got my hands on, after kind of doing a bit of research of what I wanted as my kind of portable computing device, as it were, I picked up one of the new 10.2-inch iPads on Saturday. Okay. And as you say, it is shiny and pretty and wonderful. bear in mind, I was someone that bought, I think, pretty much the original iPad. I mean, the iPad I had back in the day was so antiquated when I took it to the Apple store to, you know, for either recycling or kind of, you know, even some cash back. They kind of looked at me like why I was bringing artifacts in to the store.
But, is that a stone tablet that you brought us?
Right, basically.
Yeah.
But the 10.2-inch one, for my first kind of 36 hours with it, it's been fantastic. I'm pretty impressed with the battery life because I'm using it a lot. And, you know, I've had to charge it once since I first bought it. The transfer process, because I have another iOS device, an iPhone, was beyond easy. You literally, it says, put your iPhone near your iPad and then all the things appear.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that was all pretty painless starting it up. You don't have to do that thing where you go in the app store and spend hours searching for all the apps you want and downloading. Of course, you can then delete and do whatever you want to, you know, customize your different home pages or whatever. I found the multiple web browsers. You know, I use Chrome on it. I've used Safari on it. That's all great. 10.2-inch screen is just about big enough. I wouldn't want it any more for kind of walking around with. I wouldn't want something bigger. And it's just about big enough to, you know, for example, load up our back end of the Mac Observer and write stories and do all the editing I do there. It's basically good enough for that. For example, when I was watching the Super Bowl in bed on Sunday night, I actually used a slightly a Chromebook which has a slightly bigger screen. I compared the two. So, you know, it's not a huge screen for watching epic movies, but for watching most stuff, if you want to watch YouTube videos, quick episodes on Apple TV Plus, things like that, it's very, very good. It's obviously a very high quality display. Mm-hmm. The thing that's interested me as well is the difference of having Touch ID when I've got used to obviously Face ID with the iPhone XR.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand why the iPad A needs a home button and B therefore has Touch ID, not Face ID. And also probably on a bigger device, waving your face in front of it is not going to be that useful to people. So I kind of get it, but it's also proven to me quite how brilliant Face ID is.
Yeah, definitely.
And I maintain my theory that Face ID is one of the most undervalued Apple utilities and Apple features.
going. We may have to talk about that in depth in the future on the show, because I have similar feelings about Face ID. The other thing I would like to point out, Charlotte, since you did not point this out on the show, but you did point it out to me, is that you did buy the Space Gray in order for it to coordinate with your Mini.
Yeah, obviously. by the way, I have it in a black case. You can't even see the Space Gray.
But
you
know
it's there.
That's the part
and
that matters.
That's what's important.
Yes. And I look forward to getting to talk to you in the future about...
Oh, I forgot one other thing that's really awesome.
Yes.
Sidecar.
Yes.
You can use your iPad as an extra display for your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
This is wonderful. So I have on my Mac Mini, whatever it is, 28 or something, quite a big 4K monitor. I have one monitor on my desk. Mm-hmm. It's okay, John Martellaro. It's all okay. But, and that's great. It's a lovely, lovely, it's more than big enough for what I need. I can split it in half if I have multiple windows. It's all great. But sometimes it's quite nice to be able to cross over things. And having Sidecar, where you simply just tell your computer to connect to your iPad,
mm-hmm.
With a very, I'll do a tip on how to do it, because it's very, even though it's very,
excellent.
Very simple, it's really fantastic. You know, I can drop, say we're having this conversation using Discord, I could drop that onto my iPad, and my iPad effectively is running Mac OS, not iPad OS, and it's just another screen for my Mac, and that is a huge, huge upgrade on older iPads, and is a hugely useful utility.
Yeah. So the other thing I will point out is that I look forward to hearing, after we had conversations about you getting one, whether or not you get any sort of stylus, whether it's the Apple Pencil or something else, and what sort of keyboard situation you ultimately end up with, because I'm interested in that
too. So I do have a keyboard, but we could discuss that another time.
Well, we'll talk about it. Yeah, we will definitely have an accessory conversation in the very near future, because I'm sure I have opinions about that, and so does Dave. So I want to thank both of you for being here today. Dave, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Fun stuff.
Glad to have you here to tell us about Neil Young. And also, Charlotte, thank you for coming by to tell us about your new iPad.
Thanks. I can't wait for Neil Young to appear on Matt Geek Gab. I'll be listening to that episode for sure.
We'll try and get him on Geek Gab. Maybe that would be it.
He'll be on Geek Gab.
Yeah, even better. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I look forward to that episode as well. In the meantime, I am your host, Kelly Gamott. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. Until then, be excellent to each other.